Welcome back to the Mindful Hunter podcast. I'm your host, as always, Jay Nickel. Interesting note about today's episode. I was originally going to title it something like Everything You Need to Know About Fitness for the Backcountry or something along those lines. And I realized that when you get right down to it, that would be like a 10-minute podcast. I think fitness is probably the single most overcomplicated topic, or the topic that is most frequently unnecessarily overcomplicated by people. People sell complication, you know, and I think most things in life, most true things in life, are a lot simpler than we think they really are. But in advance of this podcast, I threw up a Q&A on my Instagram, and I just want to say how grateful I am for the engagement and the community that there is on Instagram and that I have with Mindful Hunter. It's kind of humbling these days, the shocking amount of kind of support and feedback I get when I ask these questions, because I figured I had an idea of what I was going to talk about, but it's always nice when you can get some actual questions from people, because it really cements or gives you confidence that what you're sharing is aligned with what people need to hear. And that's, you know, ultimately the fit that I'm looking for. But all these questions came in. So I think what we're going to do is I'm going to open it up with that like 5 to 6 minutes of brass tacks, no bullshit. Listen, if you've only got 10 minutes, listen to the first little bit of this podcast, and this is really all you need to know about fitness in the backcountry. And then I'm going to answer all the questions that popped up on the Q&A. Another note I will make is that I am in the process of starting the next Mindful Review. So the backpack thing went over like gangbusters. And I don't know when it will come out, but the Hunt Backcountry Boys from EXO invited me on their podcast to go over the results and just talk about gear reviews and nerding out on gear in general. And that was a really big kind of honor for me. I haven't been on a ton of podcasts. And so still when I get invited on one, it really means a lot. And it's just another signal that, you know, I'm doing the right thing, and I'm getting the feedback that I'm hoping for. But we talked about that review extensively. And so if you want a bit of a behind the scenes look at, you know, why I made some of the decisions that I made, or why the review took the shape that it did, that's going to be a great podcast. I'm not sure when it'll be out. I'm sure sometime in the next couple of weeks I'll post about it on my Instagram. But I'm getting prepared for the next round, the next category that I'm going to do. And I need your help to figure out what that is. Because again, I want there to be alignment between the things that I'm creating and the things that you need from me. So I've got a little poll up on my Instagram right now. I just threw up a question. And we're going to do a series of voting sessions. And the first one is just going to be categories. So like power packs, water filters, shelters, like real, real broad. And then we'll vote that down and land on one category. And then within the category, we'll decide, okay, is it going to be two-person shelters or one-person shelters? Going to be three-season shelters or four-season shelters, that type of deal. And then once we get it down to the more narrow, specific category, then I'll list up a bunch of products by a bunch of companies and everybody can vote, and I'll do the top four or five, you know, whatever I think I can afford this time around, assuming my wife will let me do this a second time. So head over to my Instagram, participate in that. And if you miss the first round, don't worry. It's probably going to take me, you know, 3 or 4 days and a bunch of round of voting to like get it nailed down to exactly what we're going to do, because I really want to take my time with this next one. I want to do something really interesting and engaging. And I don't feel the same pressure, because to be honest, probably won't be ready until the end of August with the bodybuilding show and the sheep hunt and all that kind of stuff. So it's not the kind of thing people are going to be able to use to influence purchase decisions for this hunting season anyways. Going over my schedule and going over what it takes to do one of these category mindful reviews, I think I can do 4 a year. I think I can do 1 per quarter. It takes about a month to kind of prepare for it, decide what to do and get all the gear in. And then it takes about 2 months to run through all the testing, shoot and edit and post all the videos. And I think I can do 4 of those a year. So yeah, Jump on IG, participate in that voting, and let me know what you want to see next on the Mindful Hunter channel as far as category level reviews go. Quick update on the bodybuilding show. I am three weeks and 2 days out from my show. And we're breaking new ground every day. I got to be honest with you. I've hit some low, low, low spots here the past couple weeks, just as far as low calories, low energy, just feeling like a bag of smashed assholes in general. And I couldn't be more excited. I couldn't be more motivated. I couldn't be more committed. It's like the harder it gets, the more into this I get. And this is one of those things where I'm shocked at how quick the feedback is. Like every single day you wake up, there's changes taking place in your body. And what it really made me realize is, as disciplined as I thought I had been in the past in some of my endeavors, there was significant room for improvement. Because, and I'm not trying to say this to be arrogant or anything, but I'll be frank with you, I'm terrified. I am terrified that I'm going to step up on that stage and I'm going to look like a piece of shit and I'm going to embarrass myself. And so that fuels my discipline, and it has enabled me to like kind of dig to a new spot where like every single little micro behavior throughout the day is the result of conscious decision. And if it's not part of the plan, it doesn't happen. That means physical activity. That means what I eat, how I spend my time, when I get up, when I go to bed. I don't think you could do this year round. I think you'd burn out. And I think there's more to life than just this, you know, psychotic level of obsession. But I think doing this for sprints, for goals that are really important to you, it really opened my eyes. I'm like, man, if I can stay this disciplined for this goal, what if I picked another goal and stayed as disciplined towards it, whether it be a financial goal or a career goal or a goal for Mindful Hunter, and just became psychotically obsessed with the outcome. And so I'm not going to dig into the details of the prep this week or tell you my weight or what I'm eating or any of that stuff. We're so close now. I'll probably hold off on all that and just do a real big, you know, breakdown episode. I'm thinking of recording a podcast solo in the hotel the night before the show, just because I think that would be a really cool glimpse into the psychology of what a competition such as this feels like the night before, after all the lead up and all that kind of stuff. And then maybe tack on a quick 15 minute update after the show is done and then post that all as one podcast. But anyways, I did just want to say that take a look at yourself and question the potential of your own discipline and how committed you've been to things in the past. And maybe there's room for more. And maybe there's some goals in your life that you didn't think were possible because you weren't capable. And maybe that's bullshit. And maybe you are capable if you were just a little more disciplined. Because I've had to be pretty honest with myself about my own. Because there's been times during the prep where I haven't been perfect. And with one of these things where it's like so cut and dry, like, did you put the food in your mouth or did you not? Because if you did, you broke your word. You like, it's very, there's no bullshitting yourself. Whereas with other goals and disciplines and physical fitness and things, you can kind of like fudge it and pretend you're disciplined when you're really not that disciplined. Anyways, that's enough on that front. Prep is going good. Couldn't be happier. Absolutely 100% present in the moment. So let's get back to fitness. So here are some general rules or some principles for fitness in the backcountry. Number one, you do not need to be fit to kill. All right? There are tons of overweight dudes that are absolute studs. They kill monsters every year. I don't think you need the right tent to kill. I don't think you need the right pants to kill. I don't think you need the right optics to kill. Here's what all of those things influence that does enable you to kill. Your mindset. If you're tired, you're going to be lazy. If you're cold and wet, you're going to be lazy. If you're not sleeping well, you're going to be lazy. You're going to be looking for shortcuts. You're going to be looking for a way out. You're going to give yourself a break, and you're not going to push yourself as hard as you could. So the reason that we take good gear, and the reason that we get fit, and the reason that we try and eat right when we're out there is so that we can stay strong in our minds and stay dedicated to the task at hand. And when we're able to do that, then the likelihood of the kill starts to escalate. And the probability of taking down, you know, that trophy animal gets bigger and bigger because you're focused, you're determined, you're committed. And this is why I like to be fit for hunting. I can tell you there is a stark difference. So I started the bodybuilding journey almost 3 years ago. And for the past two straight years, the first year wasn't so bad because I kind of started in the fall and it took a little while, you know, to really put on some weight. Even that first winter wasn't bad when I went down to Arizona. That was the year I killed my big muley buck. It was really the second 2 years of the three-year process when I was basically walking around over 250, 260, 270 the whole time. My performance and my mental state of mind, my mindset decreased those last 2 years. You know, I always joke around about the winter goat hunt when I broke the snowshoes. So I was 260 pounds and my pack was 91 pounds. So I was 351 pounds on those snowshoes. And I will be completely transparent that I did not go as hard on that hunt as I would have if I was 220. A, because the broken snowshoes kind of held me back. But B, I just didn't have it in me. Like when you walk a mile through that snow with 350 pounds on them snowshoes, and then you start looking up into the hills, your head just talks you out of it. And probably for the best, to be honest with you. Like I wasn't physically capable at that weight of what I was when I'm lighter and in fighting shape. And that's what made it so abundantly clear to me. I'm sorry, there's somebody cleaning upstairs. And so if you catch a little bit of background noise, I don't have some fancy podcast studio that's soundproof or any bullshit like that. I'm just a normal dude who works, you know, 5 days a week and tries to fit this in amongst my family and other obligations. So if there's a little bit of noise in the background, it is what it is. But I can tell you from experience that when I'm more fit, I make less excuses and I stay more committed to the task at hand. And when I'm less fit, the opposite is true. So rule number one, you don't need to be fit to kill, but it certainly impacts your mindset. Rule number two, keep it simple. Okay? I'm not going to shit talk anybody, but all of these guys online selling these 30-day, 60-day, 90-day programs, you don't need any of it. Me with my bodybuilding stuff, you don't need any of that. You might have some, you know, alternate goals, and there might be some things that you like doing. But getting fit is not a complicated endeavor, and you have it within yourself to manage your own fitness journey. Go onto YouTube. In a little Google, you're going to have what you need. You don't need some $99 a month membership to some bullshit site. Now, there is the behavioral instrument of a commitment device where if you pay for something, you're more likely to stay committed to the goal. And if that's the case, I say have at her. And I'm not gonna make any negative comments, but don't kid yourself. You're paying that money to create a commitment device. The information itself is not necessary. The bottom line here is backpack conditioning is king. So I'm telling you right now, if you only have a couple hours a week and you don't know what to do and you got a hunt coming up, you're going to put 45 pounds in your backpack and you're going to hike for an hour at least 2 to 3 times a week. And if you do that for 3 or 4 months before your hunt, You're going to be fine. There's no Olympics out there. It's not the CrossFit Games. It's not any of this bullshit. You're just hiking around in the woods. It's not rocket science. And if you can only do one thing, that one thing should be backpack cardio. Listen, if you can do it in the hills, great. If you're on the East Coast or you don't have any hills, you're going to get on an incline treadmill. Go buy a $10 a month gym membership at whatever big box thing is close to your house or an Anytime Fitness that's open 24 hours. I don't care. And go on an incline at whatever rate you can keep up with for an hour, 2 to 3 times a week. I'm telling you right now, you'll be fine. That's all you have to do. I'm not saying you can't do more than that if you don't want to, but that's all you have to do. Now, I will make one caveat there. If you can, keep it fun. I like bodybuilding. I've been lifting with a bodybuilding style mentality since I was in my early 20s. So for the last 20 years, I love going to the gym. I love training. I don't talk to anybody. I put my headphones in. I find it very meditative. It's one of my favorite things in the world to do. If I wasn't a hunter, I would still be lifting. If I wasn't doing a bodybuilding competition, I would still be lifting. I've always lifted. I've had breaks here and there for work or other reasons, but I've competed in jiu-jitsu. I've competed in CrossFit. You know, I took up running for a while. I've done a whole bunch of stuff, but the one thing I always go back to is bodybuilding style lifting. I like the solitude. I like that I don't have to count on anybody else. I like the repetition. I like progression. I like seeing change. I like noticing my body is getting stronger and looks different. And so that for me it's super easy for me to get motivated to go and do that. Today's a rest day and it's hard for me to not go to the gym. It doesn't feel right to not go to the gym. I'd much rather go to the gym than not go to the gym. So if you do have, you know, athletic endeavors, do you like playing sports? Do you like football's great. Hockey's great. Tennis is great. I don't give a shit. I think golf might be a bit of a stretch. You're really just walking around. But if you can, keep it fun. People always ask me what the best exercise is. And I always say, it's the one that you're going to keep doing. And then the final rule that I would throw out there is that being strong is more important than being lean. I'm not saying you should be a fat piece of shit. Don't take it out to the extreme. You can't be walking around there obese and say, "Yeah, but I'm strong." I'm talking about if you're like that average dude, 15 to 20% body fat, you know, instead of worrying about losing 10 pounds for your hunt, just train hard. Because going into your hunt strong is going to pay more dividends than going into your hunt lean. Because if you're doing a true backcountry hunt, you're going to drop a couple pounds of water in the first couple days anyways. And you're most likely going to lose 5, 10, 15 pounds over the course of, you know, 5, 10 days, depending on how hard you go and how intense the hunt is. I always lose weight on hunts. When I was like really lean, and competing in jiu-jitsu and hunting in the backcountry, I would actually try and put on weight before a hunt. I would try and get a little like fluffy so that I had 10 pounds of fluff to lose during the hunt. Remember, it's all about energy conservation when you're in the backcountry and you have two places you can carry calories: in your lunch bag and on your body. And so if you don't have any on your body, then the only ones you have are in your lunch bag. So that's the final thing I would say. Be more concerned about being strong than being lean. So let's just run through these real quick. You don't need to be fit to kill. Keep it simple. Keep it fun. And being strong is more important than being lean. And if you can't do anything else, do a couple rounds of backpack cardio a week, 2 to 3 rounds. Now we're going to get into the Q&A, so I'm going to get into some more complicated programming, and that if you are a little more obsessive and you want more than just average run-of-the-mill performance and you want to be, you know, I hesitate to use the word elite, but you know what I'm talking about. You're inspired by guys like Greg McHale and other, you know, individuals like this who are super dedicated and, you know, their fitness is one of the things that sets them apart as a hunter. Then we can go harder. I just wanted to really nail down the fact that you don't have to. So don't buy into the hype and don't feel obligated. All right, my buddy Bird Grabber says lateral movement. And I hit him up about this because I thought I knew what he meant, but I wanted a little bit more clarification. And he was thinking exactly what I was thinking. And that has a lot to do with walking on side hills. So most training situations aren't going to train like the lateral stabilizing muscles in your calves and your knees. So you're going to be walking straight up and straight down things. You're going to be walking on a treadmill. You're going to be walking on flat ground. And then when you get out into the bush, you're going to put a really heavy load on your back and you're going to have all these like complicated terrain features that are going to put pressure on different parts of your body and different muscles than you're used to. And you're going to burn out quickly, or you're going to injure yourself and you're going to roll an ankle, get some shin splints and, or get blisters in weird spots because you've never used your boots in this way. So if this is an issue and if you want to do something to help this, I recommend finding a little hill and walking back and forth across the front of it. So the one big hike that I go and do, it's called the Velodrome Trail or the Japanese Stairs here in Vancouver. All the way at the up at the top, the peak of the trail, you kind of walk across the back of this hill and it's side hill the whole way. And what you can do is you can do a couple laps of that side hill and just go, and by then you're already kind of burnt out. So there's this concept of sport specific conditioning. Like if you want to get better at something, you should do that thing. So I think we can take this concept of lateral movement and apply it to anything. If there's any element of specific functional fitness that you want to improve for your hunting, just look for an opportunity to do that actual thing as much as you can, or break it down into the one component and just do a bunch of that one component over and over and over again. Zach Johnson says, how much cardio should you do per week based on how many days you're hunting? This is an interesting question, and I don't think it really matters how many days you're hunting. I think in some ways, you really don't hit peak physical performance for the first few days of the hunt anyways. I've always found I wake up day three feeling best. Day 3 to 7, I'm like, I feel like a king. And then I start to burn out again after that. So I would look more at the difficulty of your hunt. If you're going to be sitting in a tree stand hunting whitetails, I probably wouldn't stress about a whole lot. If you're going to be going on an elk hunt in a place like Montana or Wyoming in the rut, I don't care if it's just one day, you better work your ass off because you're going to be running around hills and canyons all day chasing bugles. So this is really person dependent, but here's the bottom line. The more you do, the fitter you will be. So the question is, how much time can you afford to dedicate to fitness, and how important is it to you that you're as fit as you can? And then, you know, come up with your own answer. TDDad44 says, cardio options for East Coast flatlanders. So I've touched on this already, but I would say the treadmill is king. I really like weighted backpack cardio on a treadmill simply because it's so replicable. Like you can do the same workout again and again and again. So you will find yourself getting better and you will notice improvement and you can gradually make it harder and harder. You can put the incline up 1% per week. You can go up 0.1 miles per week in speed. You can, and you'll see the benefits of pushing yourself. Also, you can set it at a speed that's slightly above comfortable. Run up there, you know, walk at pace up there for a couple minutes and then give yourself a break. Like it's really, especially for the beginners, I find it's a much better system to increase performance. And people who are training for marathons and novice runners, that's what they will tell you very specifically. Running on a treadmill takes far less skill than road work. Because there's a lot less variables to manage. You don't have to manage your speed. You don't have to manage the terrain. You don't have to manage anything. So you can just think about the task at hand. And I would say the same thing is true of backpack cardio. So treadmill, do it up. Wade99 says, backpack cardio with enough weight, ever treated as a strength day, i.e. adjust rest days. This is a fantastic question, and I would agree 100%. If you're doing true backpack cardio, let's say 45 pounds, there's nothing about that that's a rest day. You should be sweaty. You should be out of breath. You should be taxed. The glycogen should be depleted from your muscles. Your legs should be burning. That should take a great deal of effort. And in no circumstances is that a rest day. Now, in the past, depending on what type of training I'm doing, you can complement that with like some upper body training as well. And then you're kind of doubling down, but I definitely wouldn't count that as a rest day. And I've also in the past, when I was bodybuilding really diligently, I've had to modify my leg days because I couldn't do backpack cardio for 1 to 3 days after a leg day. Like I would have to separate my backpack cardio and my leg day as far as possible in the week. And actually, one of the things I've recommended a lot is this hunt is a little bit different because I'm going to be doing a bodybuilding show 3 weeks before my sheep hunt. And a little foreshadowing, if I place top three in my show, that will qualify me for a pro qualifier, which is the very next week. So I could be doing back-to-back shows. We'll see. But normally, 6 to 8 weeks before a hunt, I stop training legs at the gym because backpack cardio is such a good leg workout. And I want to be doing backpack cardio every other day. And the way I train legs, there's no way I can do both. I have to do one or the other. So, definitely count it as a training day. It is not a rest day. I think a non-weighted leisurely hike could be considered active rest. However, I also believe that you should be taking 2 rest days a week, kind of no matter who you are or what you're doing, in my opinion. One of them could be a form of active rest. You could do some yoga or Pilates or go on a nice hike with your wife, like something chill, go on a bike ride with your kid. That's fine. But at least 1 day a week, I firmly believe you need to do nothing. And the reason I believe this is because of how it makes me feel. I don't feel the same after an active rest day, especially when I'm truly depleted. When I'm truly depleted, it's only those days where I just do nothing. I wake up the next morning and I'm just like, oh my God, my body feels fresh. It feels alive. So that's the other thing I would tack on here. 2 rest days a week, one can be active, one should not be active. Juby14 says, the value fitness brings to a successful hunt versus hunters just spending money on gear, glass, and guns. I think I would go back to what I said at the beginning of the hunt. I believe it, or the beginning of the podcast, I believe it brings great value to the hunt, but not necessarily the value you think it does. And that you can spend a lot of money on gear, and if you don't show up in the right frame of mind, you're going to half-ass it and come home empty. I think there's other things that contribute to that mindset other than fitness, but fitness is definitely there. You got to eat right. You got to prepare right. You got to have the right fitness. You got to leave home right. You got to make sure things are squared away with the wife and the kids. These are all really important things that will dictate, the level of likelihood of success. My buddy Keeley says, dealing with shin splints. I'm going to be honest, man. I don't have a whole lot for you here. I've had shin splints from time to time, but not for years. And I remember a physio giving me some weird exercises to train your tibia and like having to like pull up on the front of my toes, like raise up on my heels and stuff, but not an area I have much experience. I would hop on YouTube for that. Cruise On says, recovery. The older I get, the more it hurts on Monday. Yeah, bro, I'm with you. I'm going to be 44 in September. And I think diet plays a bigger and bigger role. I don't really get into it much in the podcast, but I'm sober. I've been sober for, it'll be 14 years in August. And I see the way some people drink. And I mean, I don't give a shit if you drink. Literally could not care less. But I see how it affects people the next day. And I think the older you get, and I think it's good to go out and have some fun. Don't get me wrong. I do dumb shit all the time just to go do dumb shit and have fun. And I support that deeply and wholeheartedly. But like maybe a couple time a year thing, not a couple time a month thing. I think reining that in a little bit helps a lot. You can't overestimate the importance of sleep. And I know you guys see my stories and I wake up at 4:30 and I do my cardio and I'm not the best advocate of this, but I believe this whole like, you know, sleep 6 hours a night kind of myth. I think it's bullshit. And I think we're going to see people with all kinds of backlash from that in the coming years. Like your body needs 7-8 hours of sleep. I need 7 hours a day in order to function correctly. And if I only get 6 at night, I have a nap in the day. I am a frequent napper, especially now that I'm in prep. I normally go down for about 45 minutes at 2 o'clock in the afternoon. And luckily my day, I can structure it the way I need to. And normally I have a late lunch or my third meal kind of around that 2 o'clock area. And I'll put on a YouTube video. I'll watch it for 15 minutes. And then I shut the TV off. I shut all the lights off in the basement and I go to sleep for 45 minutes. And it's like this little refresher in the middle of the day. And then I get up and I have my last cup of coffee of the day around 3:30. And then I'll either go to the gym or I'm recording this podcast. I'll do my like last little push of work before my kid gets home or I got to go pick her up. And so listen, sleep, you can't say enough. Food, you can't say enough. Proper rest, true rest, super important. Work smarter, not harder. And the last thing I'll get into for us older dudes is hormones. I think a lot of us are walking around with lower levels of testosterone than we need to be. It's a pretty simple prescription to get these days. And I did a whole episode on TRT. And this was the whole reason I got, you know, I'll give a quick little recap. I was starting my MBA. I was running an engineering firm full time. I had just had Esme, our kid. I had just moved into a new house out in the country that was on half an acre. So I had to look after that. And I felt like shit. I was tired. I had no libido. I didn't feel confident like I used to. I just didn't feel like myself. And I went and got my levels tested and I had the testosterone of a fucking 8-year-old girl. And I was like, nope, homie, don't play that shit. And I hopped on TRT. That was 5 years ago and I've never looked back. I'm not saying it's for everybody, but if you feel like something's just not right, go have that shit looked at, man. You owe it to yourself because it's a pretty simple fix and it can have pretty profound consequences or implications in your life. All right, my buddy James says, anything you know of to help with elevation? There's a few different medications you can buy, some with like the cordyceps mushrooms. Like I should say there's different categories. So there's some supplements you can buy. Wilderness Athlete has one. I think there might be one by another couple companies, but I don't know them off the top of my head. There's medications that you can take. And then there's training. You got to find a way to get up at elevation and train at elevation some way if you can. If you live in the East Coast and there's just no way to do that, then you're just going to have to tough it out. The last thing I will say about elevation is you need to take your time getting to elevation. Like if you live on the East Coast and then you want to go do a hunt at 14,000 feet in Colorado, showing up and running up to 14,000 feet is going to be problematic. The day you get to Colorado, you should be trying to spend that last night in a hotel in the highest elevation town closest to your hunt that you can find. And then maybe hiking halfway in that first day, even if it means adding another day to your hunt, getting acclimated to that elevation and then hiking all the way in on that second day. And then maybe even taking it a little bit easy. Like you need to respect elevation. Frank Peralta from Kefaru has some pretty harrowing stories about almost dying a couple times. And I can't remember the exact type of pneumonia that you get, but essentially you get liquid on your lungs from, it's like an edema, a pneumal. Anyway, I'm going to butcher the name. Respect elevation. Yeah, that's all I've got to say on that one. James follows up with, does being a marathon runner translate to bombing up and down mountains? 100% it does not. Now, Cam runs marathons, and Cam's badass in the backcountry, but this doesn't mean that all marathon runners are badass in the backcountry. In fact, there's marathon runners that can't even do 10 push-ups or 10 pull-ups. Like, they're just these spindly little, like, you know, sinew and bone type things that are fantastically good at one discipline. The better you get at one thing, the less diverse your skill set is going to be, because you're just overdeveloped for that one particular pursuit. So that's why I don't recommend jogging to get ready for a hunt. When do you jog on a hunt? You never jog on a hunt. So why would you jog to get ready for a hunt? Now, if you like jogging, there is going to be some ancillary benefit to your general overall cardiovascular health. And so, sure, sprinkle some of it in. But telling somebody that a running program is going to prepare them for hiking in the mountains is just a load of shit. What's going to prepare you for walking around with a backpack in the mountains is walking around with a backpack in the mountains, the concept of sport-specific conditioning. So I think there's room for it in a training program, but it can't be the be-all, end-all. James follows up and says, I want downhill treadmills to be more common. I think that's overlooked. What a great insight. I couldn't agree more. And I think a lot of my knee problems have been exacerbated by downhill, specifically some of the stairs that I do. I think going uphill is a much lighter impact because you're kind of like placing your foot and then slowly transitioning all your weight onto that foot. And when you come downhill, like, it's jarring in the back of your teeth. Like, if you ever wore headphones while you're doing backpack cardio, when you come downhill, it's like gunk, 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 gunk in your ears. And so I think the more you can train that, the better off you would be. And you're right. I don't see a whole lot of treadmills that go downhill, unfortunately. Who knows? Maybe that's a startup somebody should do. If anybody wants an advisor for a startup, let me know. I'll help you out. Derek Gray, good buddy of mine and a crazy good chef. I'm hoping to get out and see him this summer, says workouts to prolong your archery lifeline as shoulder issues come up over time. I'm going to make another note here about shoulder issues and archery is that make sure you're not overbowed. I was shooting an 80-pound bow for 5 years and like, yeah, it's manly and yeah, I shoot cannons. Blah, blah, blah. It's not necessary. The technology has come so far that there's no need to have an 80-pound bow. If you want it, go ahead, have it. I don't care, but it's not a necessity. And I definitely did some damage to my shoulder. You know, every time you go out there and cold crank one at 80, she's a bit creaky, man. Like, there's not a whole lot you can do about that. And so step number one, don't be overbowed. And I know what Derek's bow is set, and I know he's thought about that going in, so I'm not speaking to him. I'm speaking to everybody else. One thing I would recommend doing is carrying a couple of bands in your archery case and doing some warm-ups at the range before you shoot. That first cold crank of the bow, if you're not warmed up at all, is where you're going to do the most damage, because it's quite a bit of force that you're requiring both placing on your front shoulder and then also the pulling motion with the rear shoulder and your scapula. And so what I like to do is put my arms straight out in front of me, grab a band maybe 6 or 7 inches apart, and then spread my arms out super wide, basically doing big semicircles so that the band hits my chest, and that warms up my scapula. And then what I do is grab the band in my fist, like I'm holding the riser of the bow, and then grab the band 6 or 7 inches back from that with my other hand, like I'm grabbing the draw string, and then pulling back like I'm going to shoot my bow. And I'll do 10, 15 of each, maybe escalating. And if you want to make it harder, you grab them a little bit closer together. And if you want to make it easier, you grab them a little bit further apart. And I found that is a really good way to help reduce injury. Warming up in general is a really good way to do things. And finally, I would say, depending on what your budget is like, I think soft tissue work gets overlooked a lot. One of the things I promised myself I was going to do during prep is get a massage every single week by a legit RMT. And there's this guy, Mark, who trains at the gym I do, who's like a fucking wizard, this guy. Like, he knows so much about anatomy and how things connect. And every week I go in there with these little niggling issues and he cranks it out. And it's like, it has kept me together. Like, I guarantee I am performing better in the gym. But the thing is, massage isn't cheap. Next best bet, get one of those Theraguns, the percussive massage devices, and just get in there and loosen shit up. Like, we're old dudes, man. Calcium sets in and like muscles kind of seize up and you get scar tissue and little tendons have small tears, micro tears. Like, get in there, work it out, loosen everything up. And I think you'll find it, you'll stay a lot more mobile over the long term. My friend Kara says, how often should you train with a weighted pack versus strength training? So here's the thing. If hunting is the absolute priority, I think you should be doing backpack training 3 days a week, especially in the last 2 months leading up to the hunt. I think during the rest of the year, once or twice a week is fine just to stay in, you know, relative shape. And that's why I look at periodizing my training. Like, when I don't have a hunt on the horizon, it's way more gym style training, like the fun stuff, I like to say. And then once the hunt gets close, I trim down on the fun stuff and I start doing more of the backpack cardio. But I would say in that last 2 to 3 months before the hunt, especially if it's something you're worried about, like you don't hunt a lot, you're coming from out east and you're doing an elk hunt and you really want to make sure you've got what it takes, backpack cardio 3 times a week and then fit in lifting 2 times a week. And what I would probably recommend in that situation is like a push-pull day. So push would be like shoulders and chest, and then pull would be back. And I probably wouldn't train your legs a whole lot because I want your legs fresh for those backpack cardio days. And that would give you 5 days of training. And you could have 1 day where you did like a light yoga or a walk in the park, and then 1 day where you did nothing at all. And I think that would be a really good routine. Quentin says, core and leg strength and stamina. So this is a really great question and something that probably doesn't get introduced enough. When I'm at the gym, I like to do a lot of single leg stuff. So Bulgarian split squats, walking lunges, one leg press, like unilateral movements, because that's going to independently train each of the legs. I also think this is why I advocate so strongly for backpack cardio, because I think it's a fantastic core workout. You know, something that's kind of funny. So I've never been shredded in my life. I've never seen my actual abs. I've had ab outlines, but I've never had like a cheese grater washboard abs. And when I started losing weight, I was actually getting worried. I'm like, man, I don't even have abs in my workout routine most of the year. Like, it's not something I'm concerned about. And I was like, I don't even know if I'm going to have abs. And now that I'm down into single digit body fat, I have legitimate, like, really nice, blocky, deep abs with good separation. And I think it's from all the hiking and all the backpack hiking I've done. Because you're constantly twisting and turning and you're using your core to stabilize you. Another thing I like a lot is planks. I think planks are fantastic. Side planks, front planks, planks on Bosu balls, any of that kind of stuff. Also, I'm a big advocate of ab rollouts with those wheels. I think that's one of the best ab movements you can do. Leg raises are really good. All of that stuff, I think, benefits your core and leg strength and stamina a whole lot. All right. Dirty Mike says, how to lay out a weekly training split to balance strength and cardio pack training? Well, I just addressed that for Tara's question. And I would say, what's the priority? If it's off season and you're looking to build muscle, have 3 to 4 days a week that are hypertrophy or strength based and 1 to 2 days a week that are endurance based. And then if you're going to have 3 or 4 days a week, you can go with a body part split, or you could do push-pull legs. For people who aren't concerned about aesthetics, like balance and symmetry and making sure that, you know, your arms are developed equal to your chest, which should be most people because that shit doesn't matter in the real world. A push-pull legs program is probably the most efficient way to work out, and you can do it 3 days a week. Just Google push-pull legs, and you'll get, you know, the phone book of stuff that you can go and do. It's a very popular methodology for splitting things up. If you're a little more concerned about the beach body thing and that's just something you like, I fully support that as well. And I think you're going to want to do more of a body part split. And again, you could do like a back by, chest try, shoulders and legs. You could take your legs and split them up, quads one day, hams the next if legs are a weak point. The thing about splits are splits need to be programmed to address your weaknesses and your strengths. So you should be training things. Frequency does impact response. So for instance, if somebody has a weak back, I would say you're going to have one primary back day and one secondary back day. So on the primary back day, all we're going to do is back. We're going to do two pull down movements, two rowing movements, and one pullover movement. And that's probably going to be the day. And then on the secondary day, maybe we would do hamstrings and two back exercises. And so you'd be touching your back twice a week, and you're going to accelerate development of your back that way. But if certain things like this aren't of importance to you, you can just go with a more predetermined plan that's not so much based on specific needs. If you're just looking for overall functional fitness, stuff like that isn't as important. So in that scenario, I say go push-pull legs. Now, the other thing that you could do if it's off season is you could go push-pull legs, and then the opposite weeks, you could do push-pull backpack cardio, and you could do backpack cardio two or three times in the week where you don't do legs, and then you could do no backpack cardio in the week where you do legs, because you're going to want to give your legs at least two or three days to recover before training backpack cardio. So it's highly individual and customized, but it's got to be based on your own specific needs and desired outcomes. All right, supplements during your training. Ovis Stone, BC lad, says supplements during your training and on your hunts. I'm going to do an entire video on the supplements during hunts. And if you're curious, you can go to mindfulhunter.com/tools. And I've written an entire guide on backcountry nutrition where I get into micronutrients, macronutrients, and electrolytes, and what supplements I think everybody should be taking in the backcountry. So go read that. That's going to answer that entirely. Now, supplements while I'm training. If we disregard the PEDs, because in full clarity, I'm in the middle of a bodybuilding prep. I am competing in an open organization where drugs are completely allowed and everyone on stage is on some kind of gear. So I'm not trying to pretend that I'm not on gear. I most certainly am. I'm not going to do a deep dive into that simply because it's not my area of expertise. I listen to my coach, I listen to my doctor, and I do what I'm told. I don't want to give advice in that region. But if we're going to talk nutrition supplements, peri-workout nutrition. So peri-workout nutrition consists of your pre-workout, your intra-workout, and your post-workout. So I like some type of pre-workout, and I tend to like stim-filled pre-workouts. But I'm looking for a lot of citrulline malate because that's going to help with pump and vasodilation. I'm looking for a few other main ingredients that are in really popular pre-workouts today. If anybody listens to More Plates, More Dates on YouTube, he has a company called Gorilla Mind. I'm telling you right now, bang for your buck, the Gorilla Mind pre-workout product is hands down the best developed formula for the most affordable price. The shit is bonkers. My second favorite would probably be Hostility from Hostile, or Pre-HD Ultra from HD Muscle. All three of those pre-workouts are top notch. And it's really just if one of those guys are having a sale the week I need, I will stock up on that particular supplement. Now, intra-workout nutrition, you're going to want EAAs, essential amino acids, and all nine, not just branched chain amino acids, the three big ones. leucine, isoleucine, and valine. You want the EAAs, which has another six, which I can't name off the top of my head. And mixed in with that, ideally, you want some highly branched cyclic dextrin, or HBCD, which is essentially just a very absorbable carb that helps shuttle nutrients directly into the muscle tissue. There's lots of really good intra-workout products. Again, Gorilla Mind has one, Hostile has one, HD Muscle has one. I really enjoy all these companies. And then post-workout nutrition, the whole concept of an anabolic window is a little bit oversold, and it's not as important as some people used to make it out, especially if you're already in a caloric excess. However, you should have something in your body pretty quickly after you train. Just why not? If you're going to go home and have a meal within a couple hours, you're good to go. That's all you really need to worry about. But if you're looking for optimal performance, I would have 1 to 2 scoops of whey protein isolate and probably a banana. Replace some of the micronutrients, the potassium, some of the minerals, some of the electrolytes, and get some protein in there right away. Again, I come from a hypertrophy-focused background, so that's kind of where my mind goes automatically. But as far as training, that whole peri-workout window or peri-nutrition window, your pre, your intra, and your post is how I think about it. Now, there's other stuff that I take in the morning and the night and stuff like that, but that's a little bit off topic from actual physical nutrition. That peri-workout nutrition protocol is really meant to optimize your training. Psychologically, you want to be as focused and awake and alert as possible. And then physiologically, you want your body to be in an optimal state as far as vasodilation and other stuff to accommodate the metabolic processes that are going to go on to help you build muscle and to build endurance. The Woods Walker says, high rep versus low rep training for certain muscle groups. Very intriguing question, and something I've been playing a lot with this year, because I used to kind of train everything the same. And I don't believe everything responds the same. I believe certain muscles, and everybody's going to be a little bit different, so you kind of need to experiment on your own. But I'm going to look at like chest compared to biceps. My chest responds very well to more like a 6 to 8 rep range and progressive overload, where I'm trying to max out and I might only get 4 or 5 reps with my top set, and I build a lot of mass on my chest that way. My arms do not respond that way. My arms respond better to more pump work, 15, 20 reps, really focusing on that mind-muscle connection, really driving the blood, getting that pump. I think 2 arms, because they get worked out with your other major muscles, there's something to be said that they need to be treated differently. But I've had lots of people too say their legs blow up when they start doing like 20 rep leg presses and stuff. So I don't think there's a right answer and a wrong answer here. But what I do believe is that different muscles respond better to different stimuli under different circumstances. And I think the only way you can figure out what works for you is to experiment and pay attention to how your body responds, and then adapt your training as you need to. Outdoor misfit, recovering from injury, knee or elbow. You know, the best principles that have worked for me throughout the years have been, I'm really careful with my areas that are injured until I feel I'm about 80% recovered. And in my experience, the only way I've been able to get that last 20% and like really feel like I'm over the injury is go back to training hard. And it might hurt a little bit at first. I've had physios tell me that if the pain doesn't get over a 4 or 5 out of 10, to go through it, because you're going to be helping yourself in the long run. As soon as you get up into a 6 and a 7, you should stop because you're doing more damage. And so, and again, I'm not a doctor. I don't pretend to be one. If you have specific injuries that doctors have looked at and they've given you advice, please don't take my word over theirs. But just as a general rule of thumb, I baby things until I'm at about 80%, and then I go hard. And that usually in the next few weeks, I get over that hump and I'm 100% better. Clune's Adventure says, thoughts on CrossFit versus bodybuilding for mountain hunt and training. CrossFit is superior, hands down. You know, I did that whole thing at the beginning of the episode where you don't need to do programs and you don't need to do anything. CrossFit is the one, if you can not injure yourself and you cannot buy into like the kind of like, you know, whiteboard douchebag syndrome that tends to get most people injured in CrossFit. I think it's one of the only methodologies where it could probably fully prepare you for a backpack hunt without you really doing much else. And so if you like that kind of training and you're comfortable doing that kind of training and you respond well, I think it's one of the best things that you can do. Multifaceted, multimodal, very different, you know, group environment. I think there's a lot of positives. I think there's a lot of negatives in the culture itself. But that really varies gym to gym. So I don't want to paint everybody with a broad brushstroke, but bodybuilding is probably going to hinder your hunting performance more than help it if you take it too far, which I've proven over the last 3 years. It's why you don't see, back in the day, we used to see MMA guys that look like bodybuilders. You don't see that anymore. And that's because muscle requires oxygen, which decreases your athletic or your endurance performance. And so you start getting too much muscle on your body and you're not nearly as efficient. You're dragging around all this useless weight. So yeah, CrossFit wins that one, hands down. All right, Mert Hussein says, struggle with stamina, more effort into training, length, intensity, or frequency. I'm going to say yes, yes, and yes. And I'm going to add to that, that practice does not make perfect. Perfect practice makes perfect. How are you training? How connected are you to your training? Are you fully focused on what it is you're doing and totally present? Or are you phoning it in? And just be honest with yourself, because that tends to be the first area. You don't necessarily need to do more or longer or more often if you're not actually focused on what you're doing. So question one, am I 100% present and focused on what I'm doing? Question two, what's going to be best for my scheduler? What am I most likely to accommodate? Again, the best exercise is the exercise you're actually going to do on a regular basis. So without knowing your specific issue, I think you can play around with all of those. If stamina itself is the thing that is of utmost importance, I think I would focus on length and give yourself more recovery time. Don't increase frequency yet or intensity. Start doing things for longer. And then once you can keep up with that pace, do it a little more intense. And then once you can keep up with that pace, do it a little bit more frequent. But it's a tough question to answer given the kind of vague nature. And then last question of the day, man, that was a lot of questions. It's from Mert again. What weight backpack should I most consistently train with for hikes, step up lunges, etc.? I like 45 pounds. I like 45 pounds because it's about 2/3 to 3/4 of what most people's backpack should weigh while they're hunting. You don't need to train with 70 or 80 pounds. You're going to do unnecessary damage to your body and there's really very little benefit. It's like people who, normal individuals who train for marathons don't really run a marathon until the day of the marathon for most training programs. You know, you're getting up to a half marathon and then backing down and then going back up. So I look at backpack training the same way. Also, 45 pounds is an Olympic plate. So go to your local fitness center, buy one of those. It fits in a backpack real well. It straps down real well. It's easy to throw in the back of the truck. Nobody's going to steal it. You know, it's just a very simple way to have that weight on you at all times. So that's my recommendation, 45 pounds. All right, ladies and gentlemen, that was a hefty Q&A. So again, just to reiterate, the voting is going on for the next Mindful Review. So hop in over at my Instagram, let your voice be heard. Let me know what you want to see. If you can engage with this podcast in any way, shape, or form, like, comment, share, subscribe. It's greatly appreciated. If you want to contribute directly to the podcast, mindfulhunter.com/shop. t-shirts, hats, stickers, all that money helps fund everything I do here at Mindful Hunter. It's always greatly appreciated. And until next time, thanks for tuning in.